From all corners of the Lone Star State to all points in between, no matter where you are, it's Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. We're so grateful you're taking a few minutes out of your Wednesday to join us. Well, last night, something happened that hasn't in 25 years. The state with Heart of Dixie stamped on the license plate elected a Democrat to serve in the U.S. Senate. You know, for at least a couple of decades now, one could fairly easily visualize the general parameters of Republican electoral strength in the U.S. by overlaying a map of the Confederacy and adding in some Western states that weren't states in the 1860s. Nixon understood this political alignment, so did political strategists like Lee Atwater. Remember him? They developed campaigns consciously appealing to racial resentments known as the Southern Strategy. The biggest prize, of course, has always been you-know-where. Now, others have suggested the fulcrum isn't so much Southern as suburban. But the bigger question on this day after, and you can bet it's being contemplated by political operatives on both sides of the aisle even as we speak, is whether Democrat Doug Jones' victory in Alabama is an anomaly, a one-off, or a turning point. And not just for Alabama, make no mistake. The Republican in this contest was not a strong one. No accused child molester ever is. But expectations that enough Republicans would hold their noses and stand by their man were off the mark. And as you look through the numbers in the light of day, it's now easy to spot what could be several potholes in the road for Republicans in upcoming midterms, not just in Alabama, but considerably closer to home. R.G. Radcliffe is a political writer for Texas Monthly, and he has gone so far as to call the comparisons between Alabama and Texas painful. R.G., welcome back to The Standard.
Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit about these painful similarities between Texas and Alabama.
Well, I think one of the points I made was that you could substitute Roy Moore for the bathroom bill, in the sense that you have you had a candidate who was running on a very moral stand, and yet there was something very dreadfully wrong about it, particularly with the stalking of teenage women. And I do think that, first off, you cannot give enough credit to the women who had the courage to come forward to talk about this in terms of why this race came out the way it did. Then here in Texas, you had the bathroom bill, which had a great deal of controversy in terms of it was going to limit transgender people from going to bathrooms in public schools, colleges, and government buildings to their own gender. Yet at the same time, the changing atmosphere of America told us that, you know, that was going to make it hard for businesses to recruit employees, retain employees, get sports events to come here. Now, in both states, you have a fairly solid Democratic Party, but that Democratic Party doesn't have the ability on its own to affect the outcome of much of anything. So in Texas, it was the Republican business community that actually killed the bathroom bill. And in this race, it was Republicans like Senior Senator Richard Shelby telling Republican voters, look, I know you might not be able to vote for Doug Jones, the Democrat, so just write in anybody.
Yeah, well, now, this is really fascinating because typically people turned off by their choices won't go to the ballot box, right? But here we had enough who were sufficiently mobilized to take the time to go to the polls and cast a ballot anyway, and at least just judging by the margins, that looks like it could have been a real tipping point.
Well, it was the tipping point. There were 22,000 write-in ballots, and Doug Jones only won by 10 or 11,000 votes. And you have to assume all 22,000 of those people were Republicans who just could not vote for Roy Moore.
But this gets at a larger question, though, doesn't it, RG? I mean, whether the era of Trumpism had given voters permission to ignore these questions about the person running, so long as it gives the party a strategic advantage.
Well, you had a case where last year between Trump and Clinton, there was sort of a binary choice. You know, it was really down to which candidate do you hate more? And I'm a Republican, so I'm going to vote for hold my nose and vote for Trump, or I'm a conservative Democrat and I don't really like Hillary, but I'm going to vote for Hillary because she's not Trump. But in this race, you know, the kind of the powers that be gave this third option to Republican voters. And to me, the thing that might be significant about this is less that you're about to see people start voting Democrat, as when you start having party realignment, people don't just say, I'm a Democrat, the Democratic Party left me, I'm going to go vote Republican. They de-align. and they start not identifying as being with either party.
Beto O'Rourke, who's got a campaign against Ted Cruz for that U.S. Senate seat, he immediately released an email to his followers, a fundraising letter of sorts. What do you think of that strategy, and does this change the calculus for someone like Beto O'Rourke?
Well, it's still a little early to tell on that race. I mean, the Republican in Texas, like Senator Ted Cruz, still starts with a 6 to 9 point advantage in the voting. But some of the polling is showing that moderates in Texas are getting really fed up with Trump. And there's this disturbance that means at some point they could say, you know, pox on all their houses. It's not so much that it'd be Beto versus Cruz. It's just a pure, I want to throw all the incumbents out because all the incumbents are making me mad. And that is probably the thing that Beto has working for him the best at the moment, rather than some sort of Democrat versus Republican kind of situation.
R.G. Radcliffe is a political writer for Texas Monthly. We'll have a link to his latest at TexasStandard.org. R.G., thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Joining us now is Mark Jones. He's a fellow in political science at the Baker Institute at Rice University. Professor Jones, thanks so much for taking some time to talk with the Standard.
No, thank you. It's my pleasure.
So as you saw the returns coming in last night, you saw some of these big counties in Alabama. What was going through your mind? What were you drawing from all this?
Well, initially, the exit polls favored Roy Moore a little bit, and some of the initial returns were favoring him. But some of the big urban counties from places like Birmingham and Mobile came in late. And so once we saw the result was tight later in the night, we knew that Doug Jones was going to win because all of those outstanding precincts in places like Birmingham and Mobile were going to go overwhelmingly Democratic, and they did, thus providing him with the margin that allowed him to coast to victory by a narrow margin, but still a victory nonetheless last night.
On the morning after, though, a lot of people are talking about Jefferson County, Montgomery County, Madison County, Mobile County, and what happened there. If you were to look at what's going on in Texas, are there specific counties that have the that may have the propensity or the possibility of going from red to blue?
Well, we already have several blue counties: Dallas County, Travis County, Bear County, as
right.
well as all of the Rio Grande counties, such as Hidalgo and Cameron. Mm. I think for Democrats, if they want to try to replicate some of the things that have been done in Alabama, they would focus on the purple counties, places like Harris County and Fort Bend County here in the Houston area. Mm. And with, I think, the long reach of maybe trying to flip someplace like Tarrant County. Although in the short term, I think for Democrats, the real focus will be on some of the big counties that are already trending purple, but aren't there yet, such as Harris County and Fort Bend County, with the goal for moving them from purple, where maybe Democrats have a slight advantage, to one where it's like a much larger advantage, such as the case in Alabama. Doug Jones won the election not by just narrowly winning Jefferson and Montgomery counties. He won the election by having a landslide in those two counties, which counterbalanced the strong Republican vote for Roy Moore in the more rural counties throughout the state.
Well, I mean, the assumption, of course, is that rural counties are red counties. Do you think that still holds water?
It depends on what part of Texas we're talking about. In East Texas, that's certainly the case. But as we get closer to the Mexican border down in South Texas and out in West Texas, many of those counties are slowly becoming more and more Democratic as their population becomes more and more Latino. Now, thus far, Republicans have been able to win a sufficient share of the Latino vote, say 35 to 45%,
right,
that, along with near unanimous support from Anglos, has allowed them to carry all of those counties. But if the Democratic Party is able to win a larger share of the Latino vote, and at the same time, Latinos turn out at a much higher rate, then some of those rural counties that are increasingly Latinos could start turning blue.
Do you believe Democrats in Texas should draw some serious hope from what happened last night, or is that chimerical, if you will?
Well, I think, you know, I think it certainly is a positive outcome for Democrats, but you wouldn't want to draw too much hope from it, because in the end, Roy Moore lost that election more than Doug Jones won it, in the sense that had the Republican Party nominated a neutral candidate, uh-huh. someone who didn't have the baggage and essentially allegations of assault of minor children
right.
That Roy Moore had, then the Republican would have won. I think, you know, we can also keep in mind, Roy Moore only lost by about 1% of the vote, despite all of the allegations against him that many find quite credible. So, you know, I think Democrats can take some solace in the fact that, you know, they did capture the seat, but you wouldn't want to read too much into it in that the Republicans had a deeply flawed candidate. I think one message for Republicans, though, is that increasingly they can't nominate anyone and just expect that person to be elected by virtue of being a Republican. They're going to need to consider, even in red places like Alabama and Texas statewide, candidate quality as they move to the future. Otherwise, they're going to start seeing more and more surprises like we had last night in Alabama.
Mark Jones is a fellow in political science at the Baker Institute at Rice University. Professor, thanks so much for speaking with us on The Standard.
No, thank you. It's my pleasure.